Dear brothers and sisters, we are all children of God. We were someday in the lap of God. Ever since we were separated from God, we have forgotten God. And engaged in schisms, bigotry and narrow-mindedness, the result was we are all unhappy. God sends masters to realize that they are all one. Born with the same privilege from God, the same soul of the same essence as that of God, and the same God overhead whom we worship. So they bring this message of unity, which when we forget, all these lead to bigotry, narrow-mindedness and all schisms. Masters come, they come, they are not the monopoly of any sect, first of all. They come for all the world over. Light sun rises and gives light all around them. No question who, high or low, one country or the other, wearing labels of one religion or the other. So there is no east and west for them. The whole creation is the home of our Father. The earth below and the sky overhead. On my last visit when I came here, there was one meeting held east and west, and men from all countries who had just arrived there then, they were asked to speak on their own behalf. So I was also asked to stand up and say what I had to say. So I told them that there is this whole creation in the house of our Father. So many rooms there are, so many countries are in so many rooms in the house of our Father. All men born alike, with the same privilege from God as I submitted before, same constitution outside and inside, no high, no low, and so in the depths of this ocean of all consciousness, we are all brothers and sisters in God. And whom we worship, He is the same, called by so many names. So the unity exists and we have forgotten. They bring the message to the world that there is God, who is the maker of all universe. He is the controller of all universe and permeates all creation. This is the message they bring to the world. They say that this world did not come of itself. At the beginning the scientists said this is the action reaction of the matter, but ultimately they have come to the conclusion that Huxley, the great scientists gave out ultimately that there is a power controlling all creation which is conscious. So such masters, when they come, they say that God is love and our soul have got love in it. They bring religion of love, no new religion. And all masters who came in the past, they gave out, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength. And the second, love thy neighbor as thyself. As God resides in every heart, the same soul being of the same essence of God, we are all brothers and sisters in God, and the same, a man born with the same privilege from God. So they say, love God. God resides in every heart. we should love all, because God resides in every heart, and also we are all brothers and sisters in God. So this thing we forget, they come to revive this total this unity already exists, and we have forgotten. They say, if you would like to meet God, then what you should do? You should all love all. If you want to meet God, then you should all love all. Hatred for none. Sympathy for all. Peace will to all the world of earth under thy will, O God, and Guru Nanak Devo. And all of the masters said the same. Thanks, Guru. Kabir says the same thing. We should love God, who is the creator of all universe, who is controlling all universe and controlling us in the body too. Man body is a wonderful house we live in. It has got so many apertures, but we cannot run away out of it. Body works for as long as we are in the body, and we are in the body until that power controls us in the body. When that power leaves, we have to leave the body. So, then we should love our God. So, Tenth Guru also said the same thing, you see. God resides in every heart. If you want to love God, and you say, whom you do not see, how can you say you love God when you, those whom you see, you do not love them? Because He also resides in every heart. First of all, He resides in our own heart. He is the controlling power keeping us in the body. So in all, there is no heart without it. Somewhere it is manifest. Others, they are, though not manifest, in whom the God is manifest, they are center, they appear before the mankind to guide them properly. So there are so many sins you see in the world, one graver than the other. So Mawlana said, you made drink. So drinking is the mother of all evils. That's a sin, of course. But they say, he said there is still more greater heinous crime than that. And what is that? He said, burn all scriptures. It is still very grave sin. He said, all right, this is also grave sin, we know, but there is still greater sin than that too. And that is, put all places of worship on fire, burn them down. It's the gravest, of course. But he says there's still most grave than that, that is, don't torment anybody. Because you want to meet God, He lies in every heart, you have no sympathy for Him, you hate Him, so this is the greatest of all things. So man body is the highest in all creation, next to God, even the angels are asked to bow down before the man body. So man body is the highest of all. It is a golden opportunity afforded to us, because in this man body only we can know God, in no other body. So it is said, it is a man, Rig Veda says, it is a Brahmapuri, in which Brahm can be manifested. It is Devapuri. Is the place where God manifests. So they say, love God. This is the religion they bring for the mankind. And they tell us, the rishis, when they return, their soul return from after enjoying the bliss of the higher planes, they selected the man body to enter. Because in man body alone they can know God. Even the gods and goddesses aspire for that man body. And we are fortunate, we have got that man body. So, who we are, they say, value of conscious entity. Man learning of God, very golden opportunity, of course, to know God. But to know God, you must know yourself first, because it is you who have to know God, not the body. Body is a golden opportunity afforded to us, in which we can know God. So to know God first, we will have to know ourselves. And truly speaking, this man-body is not our home. This is golden opportunity afforded to us in which we can go back to our home, true home. So the address, O soul, this man-body of this world is not your true home. Your true home is one where all consciousness, your man, your conscious entities. So make the best use of this man-body. So man-body is the treasure house in the godly eyes. Quran says, I am a hidden treasure within you. Why don't you find me? Seek me there. Mawlana Rum says, outer place of pilgrimage of Muhammad in Makkah, you see Kaaba, is the house of God. He says that Khalilullah Rahman raised, and this man body raised by whom? By God, in the womb of your mother, is more than appreciated to be the house of God. So all masters, Guru Nanak says, look here, that the treasure of divinity is within you. To find it, just follow the word of some master. How to tap inside, how to withdraw from outside, how to come in contact, open your single eye to see the light of God which is within you. So, truly speaking, body is the true temple of God. It is the body in which what is the light of God is manifest. So this is why it is said, with all light is within us, take heed that the light within you is not darkness. Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. And those who see may be blind. What does it mean? Attention is the outward expression of soul. When our attention withdraws from outside, it is all dark. It's all becoming blind. When you see within your own self there is darkness now, that the more attention you put in there, the more darkness will be thin, you see light coming up. So this is what he meant, that I have come to make people see who do not see, and those who see, they may be blind. The blind world in the terminology of the masters is not one who has got no eyes on the forehead, but whose inner eye, the single eye, is not open. The master come to open that eye within us. So as a man, you see, outer temples are made after the model of man body. All temples are made a dome shaped Hindu temple. There and they put up those two symbols of God. God, when he wanted to be many, there was vibration. And vibration results in two things, light and sound. God is light and God is voice of the God. God is the music of the sphere, Sarvinada. So these two symbols were kept in these temples outside, made after the model of man body, put in light and sound. They can kindle and light a candle and ring a bell. In churches, they are nose-shaped, long-shaped. Therein also they put in light candle and the bell is ringing. In the mass, they are coral-shaped. There also they light a candle. In all holy places of worship, of one religion and another, all this is the symbol style. So one thing is there. We have those symbols. We are not fully aware what for the symbols stand, for want of practical people. We may be very learned, but those who have not seen the light within, how can they say the light within? God is light. We do say, God is light. If you have not seen light, then how can you say God is light? This is only what you read books or heard from anybody. So Master say it is just like a blind man saying God is light. He is evaluating in all creation. So if he has not seen, he says, he is in all creation, then it is just like a man who do not see and do not hear. So say, you must see first and then say. Then how many there are such like people in the world? There have been in the past few, even now they are, but they are few, who can open the inner eye to give the light of God within you. So this unity as man, as soul, as God whom we worship, we are all one. Unity all is this and we have forgotten. Masters come to have this unity realized by us. If that light happens, you see, the kingdom of God will come on earth. So ever since we separated from God, as I told you, we are sometimes in the lap of God. We are under great delusion. How? Our souls are under the command of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties. And outgoing faculties are drawn like anything from the outer enjoyment. So our soul, the outward expression of it is attention that is identified with the outgoing faculty, body and outer world, so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves. We say it is my body, we say it is my coat, it is my head, it is my prana, but we cannot separate us practically from us. I say this is my spectacle, I can put it up. I can say my head, I can put it up. I can say my coat, I can put it off. Can you put it off my body? So it is we who are living this man body. So Master come to tell us how to come out of the delusion. Moreover, the law of cause and effect, as you sow, so shall you reap, is also very much in action while in earth. And some on account of what you forgetfulness under a great optical illusion, the ocean goes on coming and going, never ending, because we are the doer. So Master tells us what to do. He says we must come out of this man body. O man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. All Masters in the East and the West both gave us this solution for the whole. This deception, how to come out, how to eliminate this optical deception, you say. Body is made of matter, and the soul is conscious entity. Outside world is also made of matter, both changing at the same speed as our body, and we are identified with the body so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves. When two things are changing at the same speed and we are identified with it, it appears we are all stationary. How great delusion it is. Optical illusion. The only thing is we can rise above body consciousness. We know ourselves, who we are, what we are. We have got the man body, we have got the intellect, but we are conscious entities. It is you and level the mind, this faculty of this body. We who give strength to the outgoing faculties to see, to hear, to taste. And it is we who are controlled by those things. How pity it is. Us, what we put before the cart. Cart is put before the heart. So Master said, unless all Masters, less Greek philosophers said the same thing. In their own language, of course, we know the Theotom. Old Latin philosophers said the same thing, nasi tipsum. Persian philosophers say, the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know self. If you are not so much about the physical body, so much about the intellect, and you have known little or nothing about your own self, then you are an ignorant man. It is we who are to live the body. It is you who are living the body. And it is you who are now controlled by the body and outgoing faculty like anything. So you'll find that the parable to show that one man was praying God. Somebody asked him, what's the matter, what for you pray God? He said, last night thieves came here and took away my heart. People said, what is there to thank God? He said, I'm thanking God that I was not riding on the horse, otherwise I would have been taken up. I think he was very wise. He saved the rider, let the horse go, and once you have done, we have kept the horse. The rider is forgotten. So Guru Nanak says, unless you analyze yourself with all your attention from all outside and from body below, come up to the feet of the soul at the back of the eyes, and your inner eye is open, the single eye, then single eye be open, thy whole body shall be full of light, until that the deception cannot go out. Now, of our own self, why can't we come out of this delusion, I would say? Because we are identified with the outgoing faculties, body and mind and intellect. In all practices that we follow to know God or to know Self, they all relate to body, outgoing faculties, mind and intellect. So we are already identified and do practices, follow practices such which relate to those things, how can we rise above body consciousness? Some people, it is seen, they have got some backgrounds. They see light, they hear some sound, but they go to the doctor to treat them what is disease. They do not know what they got to do. So my point is, Guru Nanak says, unless you analyze yourself, rise above body consciousness, you cannot know God. So to know oneself is the first step that we have to take. Other things will follow after that. So Emerson said, tap insight. And Christ also said, you know, except you be reborn, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Nicodemus, the Jewish head, who was a very learned man, came up to him saying, Lord, we are grown up people, how can we re-enter the womb of the mother and be reborn? And the Christ told him, look here, you are a learned man, people respect you like anything, don't you know that flesh is born of the flesh and spirit of the spirit? Then he said, you must be reborn. So reborn means one birth in this man body, the other birth into the beyond. These things, all masters, they told you, East or West, makes no difference. They all have the same thing to say in their own language, of course. In the East, among the Hindus, there is a custom to be twice born. Children of 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old, they are made twice born. They are given what? Gayatri Mantra. Perhaps you might have heard about it. It is a hymn, it is a mantra considered to be highest. That means rise above bodies, except the ray of the sun was coming up to you and rise to the sun to be one with Sara. O Lord, direct our attention to that. That's the prayer. The children of 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old, children were made twice born. They have given this mantra, and at the same time they have given demonstration of how to rise above body consciousness, open the single eye within or the third eye to see the light of God. The same custom even now prevails amongst the Hindus. They give the same mantra to them, but no demonstration, for want of practical people. So, practically it is something, you see, to rise above body consciousness are dying by the life, are to be reborn. So, all Master said, learn to die so that you may begin to live. St. Plutarch tells us, those are indicated in the mystery as beyond, their soul has the same experience, passed through the same process as a dying man while living the body, reverts to the back of the eyes and his eyes are upturned. There he leaps into the beyond. But in that case, the silver cord on which is based on the reaction of the past is broken. He never returns. But to die while alive, that silver cord is not broken, he has to return. Saint Paul said, I die daily. Take cross daily. On Masis, Quran says, die before you actually die. Somebody reported to Prophet Muhammad, you look at is this a death which will lead us to the great people? He said, no, no, it is not such a death. It will lead you from darkness to light. The sun sets this way, it rises the other way. So you got the man body to go and then to die while alive. This is a golden opportunity you have got. Dadu, saint of Egypt, also says the same, learn to die so that you may begin to live. Vipunana says, learn to die daily, 100 times a day, if you can, at will. All glory and beauty lies within you. Ashrubha, plane is more beautiful than the physical one. Cause of still more and subtle spiritual plane is more beautiful and enchanting than the outside. Once you have a bliss of that, you won't like to return. No man doesn't dare to go beyond. Man is afraid of that. And nobody can escape that. This is pity. All have to leave body. All things. All incarnations, all kings, all papas, all, one and all, everybody has to leave the body. And we also have to, you may say further. So, how to conquer death? You know, when there is no escape from it, then we should learn to die. What to die means to leave this physical plane, rise into the beyond. And this is what the Master gave the very first day at the time of initiation. How to rise above body consciousness. So such like masters are wanted, who know of this world as well as of the beyond. Their body appears to be in the world, but their soul is the mouthpiece of God. They appear to be engaged in so many outer pursuits, but whenever they want, they rise above body consciousness and traverse into the beyond. Those who are competent to that extent, then they are competent to raise you also above body consciousness. Withdraw your attention from all outside, take it to the seat of the soul at the back of the eyes and talk to the beyond. So we are afraid of death for two reasons. One, we do not know how to leave the body. You see? Scriptures tell us, Puranas tell us, that when its soul leaves the body, it has terrible pain, like 1,000 scorpions sting together. One scorpion bites you, see, terrible pain, what to speak of 1,000 scorpions biting together. Mohammedan scriptures tell us the same thing. The soul, when it leaves the body, it experiences the same trouble, what when you put a thorn bush to the rectum, to the elementary canal and take out from the mouth. You've seen many men dying in terrible pain. They cannot leave the body. So what Master tell us how to rise up the very first day. Then day to day practice and you feel joy to go into the beyond. Kabir says people are afraid. One thing, no, they do not know how to leave the body. And moreover, they do not know what is the fate awaiting us after the body. Those who sit at the feet of the masters, they know how to leave the body by regular practice. First day the demonstration is given to that effect. And second, they begin to traverse into the beyond. They go jolly. I mean here, twice before. I came from very journey, I know this is a place. So it is something, sunsetting this way and rising the other way. So the Master is praying, O God, send a such like man who can take us out of the box of our body.
Good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first part of the talk called We Are Children of God, given on November 16, 1972 at San Jose, California. Our reader this morning is Michael Brown. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Pradeep, and thank you, and good morning to everyone. Today, I'll continue reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, beginning where I left off last time, which was actually last October, and that's on page 45 of Chapter 2. The majority of us simply lead an animal existence, living like them in a blind life in the brain. We have never risen above the emotional and mental worlds which we ourselves have cast around us, and which now hold us in their iron grip. The heaven's light is to most of us a figment of human imagination, and not a reality. While with us in the body, we see him not. Fie on a lifeless life like this. O Tulsi, everyone is stark blind. Kabir tells us the entire world is groping in darkness. If it were a question of one or two, they could be set right. Nanak also speaks likewise. To the enlightened one, all are purblind, for none knows the inner secret. Nanak then goes on to define blindness. They who lack eyes are not blind. Blind are such as see not the Lord, and eyes that see the Lord are quite different. Again it is said, the eyes of flesh see him not, but when the Master illumines the eyes within, a worthy disciple begins to witness the power and glory of God within himself. How is it that we do not see him with all our earnest and well-meant endeavors? Enveloped in darkness, we strive darkly for God by deeds not less dark. Without a perfect master, none has found the way, nor can one do so. But when one comes across a perfect master, one begins to see him with an eye opened in the closet of his heart. It is only by direct communion with the name, the Holy Word, that one comes to know that by knowing it, nothing else remains to be known. In Japji, the great teacher recounts the innumerable benefits which spontaneously begin to flow and one becomes the abode of all virtues. By communion with the Word, one can attain the status of Siddha, a peer, Asura, or Anath. By communion with the Word, one can understand the mysteries of the earth, the supporting bowl, and the heavens. By communion with the Word, the earthly regions, the heavenly plateau, and the netherworlds stand revealed. By communion with the Word, we can escape unscathed through the portals of death. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the Word washes away all sin and sorrow. By communion with the Word, one can attain the powers of Shiva, Brahma, and Indra. By communion with the Word, one can win esteem from all, irrespective of one's past. By communion with the Word, one can have yogic insights with the mysteries of life and self all revealed. By communion with the Word, one can acquire the true import of sastras, smritas, and Vedas. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the Word washes away all sin and sorrow. By communion with the Word, one becomes the abode of truth, contentment, and true knowledge. By communion with the Word, one gets the fruit of ablution at 68 pilgrimages. By communion with the Word, one wins the honor of the learned. By communion with the Word, one attains the stage of Sehaj. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the Word washes away all sin and sorrow. By communion with the Word, one becomes the abode of all virtues. By communion with the Word, one becomes a sheikh, a peer, and a true spiritual king. By communion with the Word, the spiritually blind find their way to realization. By communion with the Word, one crosses beyond the limitless ocean of illusory matter. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the Word washes away all sin and sorrow. Thus, we see that the secret of success, both here and hereafter, lies in attuning the self within to the over-self or the sound current, which is the be-all and end-all of existence. Nanak therefore exhorts, it is by a great good fortune that one takes a human birth, and one must take the most of it, make the most of it. But one goes down in the scale of creation by deliberately breaking away from the saving lifelines in him. It is indeed a sad plight for one who gains the possessions of the whole world but loses his own soul. Far from having any profit, he incurs a dead loss, irreparable and irretrievable, whereby he suffers for ages before he comes again to the human level. Once the opportunity is allowed to slip through the fingers, the gains made so far go overboard, and one hopelessly flounders on the shoals and sandbanks of the stream of life. The fall from the top rung of the ladder of life is a terrible fall indeed. Chapter 3, Life in Fullness. This earth, the arena of so many struggles and strifes, full of sharp antinomies and contrarieties, presenting, as it does, a vast panorama of life in its variegated forms and colors, is but a speck in the boundless creation of the great Creator. There is no end to the creation. There are countless forms of life with varied names, species, and colors, writ on the objective world by the ever-flowing pen of the Creator, or Nanak. With all its seeming imperfections, this world serves a useful purpose in the divine plan, just like an apparently insignificant cog in the machinery of a great powerhouse. Nature, the handiwork of God, is not the least extravagant in its design and plan. The world is a penitentiary, a house of correction, a sort of purgatory, a plan of expiation, a training ground where souls get chastened by experience. It is a halfway house between physical planes and spiritual realms. The powers that be of the earth are hard taskmasters, believing still in the ancient Mosaic law of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Here, all kinds of third-degree methods are employed and hard knocks are administered, rendering less than justice, untempered by compassion and mercy, so that one should take his lesson seriously and by degrees turn away from the way of the world to the way of God. Life on the earth plane, then, is a dreadful thing, dark with horror and fear, and we are long-lost children of God in the labyrinthine wilderness of the world. Evolution is in the nature of living monads and consists in moving towards its source and becoming one with it. For true happiness lies in fellowship divine, fellowship with essence till we shine, fully alchemized and free of space. But the tragedy of life on earth is that we do not know what we are, and much less of what we may become. For what we are, we do not see. What we see is our shadow. The inner being in us is so constituted after the fashion of God that it knows no rest until he rests in him. A truly religious experience says Plotinus, consists in the finding of the true home by the soul exiled from heaven. And the experience can be ours if only we know how to unhook the self from the trammels and trappings of body and mind. Self-realization and God-realization are the highest objects of mundane existence. Self-realization precedes God-realization. Know thyself has ever been an article of faith with the ancients. First the Greeks, and then the Romans in their turn, laid down great stress on gnathi seton and nasi tieptesum, as they called it respectively. And both these terms stand for self-knowledge or knowledge of the self in us. The knowledge of the self, or atam jnana of the Hindu rishis and kud shanasi of the Muslim dervishes, comes first. Next comes the realization and experience of the over-self or God. And this is called kuda shanasi, or knowledge of God. The process of self-realization, whereby the self can be separated from the mighty maze of mind and matter, begins with introversion, receding of attention, the outward expression of spirit in the world outside. It is an art of inversion from the world of senses to the world within, and beyond the physical senses, technically called pravidya. Real life, or reality, is something that is cognized only in a death-like state, a state that intervenes on conscious withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body to the eye focus. Life is an active principle, however removed from senses and observation. In the workaday world, we are prone to all kinds of lusts, lust of the flesh, eyes, ears, and other sense organs. And we are being constantly swayed by countless attachments, myriads of aspirations and desires, springing from the diverse longings of the heart and unknown latencies lying hidden in the folds of the mind. All types of likes and dislikes, prides and prejudices, loves and hates, and many other things unwittingly keep creeping into our consciousness, personal consciousness, frittering our energy, and keeping us away from the ultimate goal and purpose of life, to wit, self-realization. This ignorance of the aim of life is a serious malady we are afflicted with, and it is the cause of bondage, bondage of the soul to a world bursting with sin and sorrow. Yet, there is a power within us that resurrects the soul. We have, therefore, to take a turn from this drama of hectic activity and find the still center of our being within the human body, where the all-pervading and all-free power resides. This body is verily the temple of God, and the Holy Ghost dwells therein. So all this present activity has got to be reversed and geared back into the opposite direction. This is termed by Emerson as tapping inside and going into the foxhole in the brain, as once remarked by President Truman, for it was into this foxhole that he repaired whenever he wanted peace and relaxation from the burden of his high office. The Vedas call it Brahmrendra, or the hole through which Brahman could be contacted. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you, St. Matthew says, significantly enough. It shows that a door within the body leads into the realm beyond the kingdom of God. And of this inlet, it is said, straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. To locate this gate and to have an experience of the ingress makes for personal conviction, for nothing becomes real till it is experienced. Intellect is finite, and so is reasoning based on intellect. Scriptural texts speak of truth, but do not demonstrate it, much less give a contact with truth. Logical knowledge is all inferential and cannot be depended upon with certainty. Certitude comes only when the external word speaks, the shortest, the swiftest, and the surest way to plumb truth is through a mortal leap into the unknown, says Henri Bergson, the great philosopher. Perception, intuition, and reasoning just help in understanding the reality to a certain extent at the level of the intellect. Seeing is believing, seeing within the one's own eyes, the single eye as it is called. Of this inlet or ingress, little is known to the people at large. Nanak emphatically declares, the blind find not the door. In order to find the straight gate and the narrow way leading unto life, life eternal, the life of spirit as distinguished from the life of flesh, we have of necessity to recoil from the present downward and outward expansion, gather in the outgoing faculties of the mind at the seat of the soul, behind and between the eyes. In other words, we have to change the center of our being from the heart center as it is present to the eye center, and to develop the single eye of which Jesus speaks, if therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. This single or third eye, variously called by the sages as Shiv Netra, Divya Chakshu, or Chashmi Batin, provides an ingress into the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, now a lost realm to most of us. It is here that one has to tap within and to knock, and knock hard with fully concentrated and single-minded attention as an undivided individual in order to find the way in and gain an entry into the astral world. Hence, the exhortation, now is the time to awaken and lovingly remember the Lord. But how? We have not seen him, and one cannot concentrate on and contemplate the formless void as he is. In the same breath comes the sage's counsel as well. Learn of this approach to the absolute from some God-man. What does the God-man say? Fix thou thy attention at the eye focus, the seat of the Lord Shiva, the Shiva Netra, for then everything will follow of itself in due course, as you will gain experience of the self in you. The masters tell us that the entire world is blindly groping in the dark, chasing the fleeting shadows, ever eluding and ever fading away into airy nothings as we draw nigh to them, while the fountainhead of all bliss and harmony lies untapped within, at the eye center, which is the seat of the soul, in the body, in the waking state. This center, when located, gives an access to and provides a supraconscious contact with the realms that lie beyond the furthest ken of the human mind. Equipped with the sense organs, our only means of knowledge is through them. The soul is perfect without the senses, for its action is direct and immediate, and not indirect and mediate, depending upon outer aids as knowledge of the world is. After obtaining this contact, one is led, step by step, to the true home of the Father. This is life in fullness. Thrice blessed is man, for it is given unto him the power to traverse the regions both astral and causal, and to go into the beyond, Brahm and Parbrahm, the regions of eternal bliss outside the pale of repetitive creation, dissolution, and grand dissolution. But so long as one does not withdraw himself from the world, and from himself as well, from his body, mind, and intellect, he does not draw any the nearer to God. It is only when the outward man perishes, the human in the body is transhumanized, that the inward man, the spirit, is renewed, and the dizzy heights of the Mount of Transfiguration are gained, and one becomes a living spirit freed from the body and its impediments, capable of getting inner experience of meeting the ancient masters like Moses and Elijah, and joining the Lord in the feast of Passover. That was from Matthew and Mark. It is at this place that the Lord awaits his disciples. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and he with me. Revelation 3:20. All this experience that St. John reveals to us, he had when he was transformed in the Spirit. And he speaks of the coming in of the Lord as a thief in the night, in the darkness of the soul. Hafiz, a Persian mystic of great repute, also testifies, the Murshid comes in the darkness with a lantern in his hands. The way Godward, says Prophet Muhammad, is narrower than hair and sharper than the razor's edge. It is described by Nanak as kandidar, sword's edge, and thinner than a hair. And one has actually to pass through a death-like experience. In this contact, St. Plutarch says, at the moment of death, the soul experiences the same impressions and passes through the same processes as are experienced by those who are initiated into the great mysteries. But how many of us are prepared to experience the death process while living? We are all mortally afraid of death. And why so, particularly when we know, and know so well, that it is the necessary end of all created things? The reasons, therefore, are not far to seek. In the first place, we have not yet learned to die at will while living. And secondly, because we do not know what happens after death. Where do we go? What lies beyond the death trap? This is why we have a horror of death. And the mere idea of death holds us in a state of mortal terror. The entire world is mortally afraid of death, and everyone desires to have an endless life. If by the grace of the Guru one learns of death in life, he becomes the knower of divine wisdom. O Nanak, he who dies such a death, he gains for himself the gift of life eternal. Death, after all, is not a dreadful incident. How charming is divine philosophy, not harsh and crabbed as the ignoramuses suppose, but sweetly melodious as Apollo's lute, and a perpetual feast of nectared sweet. It, in reality, opens new vistas and new horizons of life beyond the grave, and the flames of the funeral pyre that engulf, entomb, and extinguish the mortal remains. Dust thou art, and to dust returneth, was not spoken of the soul. The life principle in us, or in fact in any other living thing, never dies. It is only the elemental parts that go through a process of change, which we erroneously call death, and wrongly understand it to be an extinction. In nature, death feeds life, and life illuminates death. It is the universal law that operates everywhere and on all planes of existence. The wise man discovers that the perception of reality comes with the annihilation of the self, the bodily self, in which the spirit is incarcerated. The moment the spirit voluntarily breaks through the fetters, something breaks in upon the spirit with a terrible illumination from the world behind the world, making it the prophet of the Most High God. It is at the Mount of Transfiguration that one gets revelations and sees the mingling of heaven and earth. It is here that one finds the dark grows luminous and the void fruitful. Everyone has, as a matter of course, to die someday, man, bird, or beast, rich or poor, healthy or diseased, young or old. The soul which takes on the physical raiment has to shed it one day. Death alone is certain and real, while life in this world is uncertain. We seldom pause to think about the long journey which lies ahead of the inner being in us. We usually lament the death of others and mourn for them for days on end, but are not wise enough to care for our own end and prepare ourselves for the final journey into the great unknown that lies beyond life's end. Before an analysis is offered of the death process, practical and informative as it may be, it would be worth our while to know at least what we are, who we are, whence we come, whither we go, and above all, what is the meaning or purpose of life. Man, as is presently constituted, is an aggregate of body, mind, and intellect, with a great motor power working from behind called soul. Formed and environed as we are, through the ages, our attention is continuously flowing outwards and downwards through the nine portals of the body, the eyes, the ears, the nostril nares, the mouth, and the two passages below the waist. It is not that we wish it to or do it voluntarily, but it just has become a habit with us. We are not yet master of the house in which we live. We are being constantly dragged out by mind and the senses through the various sense organs into the vast and varied fields of sense enjoyment. It is this constant association of the self in us, attention, with the mind and the material objects that has not only debased us, but defaced us beyond recognition, and now we do not know what we really are. We have become so identified with our limiting adjuncts that we do not know anything independent of and apart from them. Unless the self gets depersonalized by throwing off the mask of dross personality with which it has covered itself and becomes disrobed self, pure and simple, by the dissociation from these countless limiting agents. 1. The mind, comprising the faculties of hoarding impressions, chit, thinking, manas, reasoning, intellect, buddhi, and egotism or self-assertiveness, ahamkar. 2. The sheaths or coverings, physical, subtle, and manocausal. 3. The inborn and natural propensities of righteousness, sattva, mercurial restlessness, rajas, and inaction born of ignorance, tamas. 4. The five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, of which the entire physical creation is made. And 5. The 25 compounded elements in varying degrees of proportion, prakritis, which prepare the physical molds or bodies in different shapes and patterns, shades and colors, as a result of karmic reaction, the self-imprisoned in so many meshes cannot know its own real nature, much less its divine ancestry and the rich heritage, all of which come to light only when it comes to its own and realizes itself as a self-luminous self. Let us see what some of the English thinkers have to say in this context. Man is a little world in himself, made cunningly of elements and angelic spirit. His godlike qualities have depraved by the fall, and he is constantly visited by divine wrath, wars, plagues, and thunderstorms. Yet he can enjoy a civilized happiness, provided he treats the world as preparation for the next, and keeps the body subject to his soul. John Donne. What is it to trust unmutability, if that in this world nothing may endure? Skelton. There is within the all-comprehending ambit of animal instinct some secret urge which drives the chosen men towards transcending of animal impulse. This transcending animal impulse manifests itself in complete disinterestedness of all that is in the world without. The urge of animal ego is completely disregarded, and the evidence of this disregard is a willing submission to a self-sought death. An acceptance of the annihilation of the animal instinct is arrayed against this acceptance, till nothing remains in the subjective side but pure consciousness, and one is transformed into a superior being who whom he imagines, contemplates. Nothing ever becomes real till it is actually experienced. Even a proverb is no proverb till your life has illustrated it. But how many philosophers have made this acquisition? For this, the mind has to be reintegrated, made an undivided whole, as a faculty of sense, integrating, which is a prelude to and a necessary condition to total detachment from it. The self must be made whole before one can wholly detach oneself from it, body, mind, and intellect. It is an all-seeing mind which embraces the totality of being under the aspect of eternity as we gain our entrance into the world of being. A total vision is ours. Middleton Murray. There is a communication between mystery and mystery, between the unknown soul and the unknown reality. At one particular point in the texture of life, the hidden truth seems to break through the veil. Ibid. And that concludes my reading today. I finished chapter 2 and read much of chapter 3, entitled Life in Fullness, from Master's book, The Mystery of Death. Thank you, Master, for sharing these words of wisdom with us, and to all of you for listening.
Thank you, Michael, for reading for us. There were 85 of us in today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
All these relationships, see, they are brought together only as reactions of the past. To pay off their debts, really, pay them off with love.